This is a download from BFM 89.9, the business station.
It's 5:07. You're listening to the evening edition with Sharmila and Lynn. So Dewan Rakyat Speaker Azhar Azizan Harun has asked MPs to sign statutory declarations, or SDs, as we've so dearly come to know. And this is, of course, to indicate who they support to be the next Prime Minister.
So if you're wondering how this works, he said in a letter that formally asked for all MPs to state who they support to be the next Prime Minister. These SDs must then be handed over to the palace before 4 p.m. tomorrow. And the Speaker did say that he was following orders from the Agong. And if I may quote from the letter, he said, as instructed by decree from His Majesty, I hereby give notice to you to submit a letter clearly stating one MP whom you believe should become the ninth Prime Minister. The decision then has to be sent to the Agong's private secretary, Azim Muhammad Alim. And I think the reason why we wanted to be as clear as possible about that is because, as we know from the last time on our this particular merry-go-round, and as we also heard from multiple guests yesterday, I think one of the reasons why many of us have come to look askance a little bit at the idea of an SD is also because of the lack of reliability, right? We know that in the past, we've seen people change their minds. We've seen people sign more than one. So I think this is at least how it's going to work. And this is how there is going to be a clear idea of who supports who.
So not to unfairly malign the concept of SDs,
yes,
right? Just to get down to what they actually are. So under the Statutory Declarations Act of 1960, when you sign and submit an SD, it basically makes it a criminal offence for you to falsely declare any facts. And so when you make an SD, you're presumed to be stating the truth and nothing else. But if we look at the use of SDs, just in the recent past, doesn't have to go back too long, back in February 2020, of course, there were the whole spate of SDs claiming to support Mahathir post Lanka Sheraton, right? Or rather, in the whole kamalut that surrounded Lanka Sheraton, if I may say. And that, I think, that really for us was the most recent and the most perhaps significant idea of why people have wearied of this idea.
Yes, because when you say a whole spate of MPs, look, I mean, we're so focused now on 112, right? We keep saying, okay, how many more do we have to go? Is it 10? Is it 7? But at the time, multiple sources actually said that 138 MPs signed an SD to support Tun Dr. Mahathir, which is, that's far beyond the 112 that we keep talking about. And yet, as we saw, that did not necessarily materialize into anything concrete. I mean, subsequent meetings with the Agong, as well as the subsequent appointment of Tan Sri Muhyiddin Yassin, really tells you how that story played out.
Yes, so we've come to this now. And of course, this is par for the course. The only way we at this point can elect the next Prime Minister, or rather the Agong can appoint the next Prime Minister, is by a declaration of majority support. So this seems to be one way in which that can be made. And so we are going to spend the first half of our show really looking at this process and trying to understand what goes into it, what are some of the ways in which it can unfold, and what it might mean really moving forward. So we'd like to hear from you. Are you also feeling some sense of deja vu about all of this? How are you feeling in general? You can call us 7732900, WhatsApp 018-789-8899, tweet us at BFM Radio. Coming up after this, we'll be joined by parliamentary consultant and researcher Maha Balakrishnan. So keep it here on the evening edition, BFM 89.9.
Thank you for listening to this podcast. To find more great interviews, go to bfm.my or find us on iTunes. BFM 89.9, the business station.
It is 5:13. You're listening to the evening edition with Sharmila and Lynn. And today we are looking at the latest development in, post the resignation of our Prime Minister. The Speaker of the House, Azhar Harun, has asked for MPs to send in SDs declaring which candidate they support for the post of Prime Minister. These will be submitted to the Agong by tomorrow, 4 p.m. So we'd like to understand that better. And so very shortly, we'll be speaking with Maha Balakrishnan, who is a parliamentary researcher and consultant. But let us know, are you also having a sort of here comes the merry-go-round again feeling, that sense of deja vu with all of these SDs? You can call us, 7733-2900, WhatsApp 018-789-8899, tweet us at BFM Radio. And now we have on the line with us Maha Balakrishnan, who is a parliamentary researcher and consultant. Maha, thank you for being with us today.
Hi, both. Thank you for having me.
Let's start with a decree by the Istana, right, for the MPs to submit a name for Prime Minister. What are the laws and regulations that form the basis for this sort of thing?
Well, the Agong's authority to ask all MPs to indicate who their choices for PM, of course, stems from his power and discretion under Article 43 of the Federal Constitution to appoint a Prime Minister. There are no other written rules which govern how this process is to play out. And this is why perhaps the best methods to use in this process has been a subject of debate and also some controversy over the last few decades or so. So, of course, in my view, the overriding principle should always be that the determination of confidence should take place on the floor of the House. It's, of course, the most transparent and accountable way to determine the question of confidence. But apart from that, it is also the method that is the most direct route to connect the will of the electorate through their parliamentary representative. You know, having said all of that, there will be circumstances where it is not possible to go to parliament and the Agong must take control of the process. But even when that happens, I think what we need is a process that is clear, consistent, accountable, and also as far as possible, transparent. In this present situation, I can see the reasons why there may be a need to expedite the process. We are facing a time crunch and a special sitting of parliament might have been ideal, but I think practically at this point, it is getting more and more difficult to do so. I'm sure all of these factors were taken into consideration in the decision-making process. But I think whatever outcome comes out of the process before the Agong, it is imperative and it is within each party's control to commit at the earliest opportunity to prove the new PM's majority in the House, on the floor of the House.
And if we take it back to a year ago, we keep alluding to this sense of, have we been here before? Is this similar to the process that followed Lanka Sheraton?
Yes and no. So the obvious similarity, of course, is that once again, the issue is not being determined in the Dewan Rakyat, but in Istana Negara. In terms of dissimilarities, however, we're still piecing together exactly what method of determination the Agong will use this time, which is in itself a problem. We shouldn't really have to piece this together. It should be clear. Having said that, things are unfolding as we speak, and I understand at this time, the Agong has decided to meet all the party leaders together. That's a wise approach. That's not, I believe, a step that he took last year. And I hope that what is happening today in this discussion is that the Agong is making very clear to all the party leaders the method that he is adopting in coming to his decision. I would also add that the first step of actually reaching out directly to MPs, circumventing the party to request for the SDs, is actually on balance a good approach, especially given the lack of consensus among some of the coalitions and parties about who their candidate is going to be. But if I could just add one more thing, because we keep coming back to this issue, and not simply at federal level, but also at state level repeatedly. And I think it's very important to take a broad perspective and see where we are at this point in time and why we're here. What we've witnessed in Malaysia in the recent past, and I mean in the last 15 or so years, is a twofold departure from that straight line of ownership and accountability I talked about earlier. Yeah. First, when we look at the controversial cases of appointment of PM and chief ministers over the last 15 years, what we have seen is that there has been a reversal of order of preference of going to the House. And instead, we are starting now to prioritize or give the principal role of decision making about who is PM to the head of the state, head of state, whether it's the Agong or the state ruler. This can become a problem. Yeah, it does. In fact, it is a problem because what it then means is there is no impetus, there is no incentive to empower parliament to be able to do so. And so we end up with a situation like we have this time around, where my sense is that the Agong probably is a reluctant player this time around and would much have preferred parliament to decide this issue. But there were no procedures in place. That parliament wasn't independent enough to be able to pull this off. Yeah. And the second issue that we seem to have accepted is that from past cases, is that the methods employed by the head of state, we don't expect it to be a prescribed and consistent process. Yeah. And that is a problem. And of course, the third issue, which is also quite critical, is we have gone beyond simply asking the head of state to determine who has a majority confidence in his opinion, to in some cases just submitting a couple of names or a few names and asking the head of state to make a decision. That to me goes way beyond what the constitution allows, both the head of state at state as well as federal level, because the head of state must be prescribed to choosing someone who has the confidence or is likely to have the confidence of the majority. And surely that cannot be the case if you're submitting more than one name.
Mm. Now, to look at this process that's currently unfolding, of course, we are hearing about this through the Speaker of the House, who says he's fulfilling the Agong's request. So is it customary for the Speaker of the House to be in charge of this process?
No, it is certainly not customary for the speaker to be pulled in to act as a liaison point almost between the Agong and the MP. Normally, of course, in a party system such as ours, that role falls on the political party, which is why I find it really fascinating that the YDP has chosen to do this. I could speculate as to reasons. I mean, first of all, it could simply be a practical issue. The speaker's office may, from a point of convenience, been the easiest party to contact to issue the letters out to the MP in the shortest possible time. I do note from the letter, though, that while the speaker issues out the request, it is actually the palace that collates the SDs, you know, so they are the return address. Secondly, of course, reaching out directly to MPs through a non-party route is actually good for appearances. I think it demonstrates to the public that the Agong is opening up a channel of communication directly with individual MPs to submit their SDs. Thirdly, it also, I think, creates the impression of allowing MPs to make these decisions independently and free from party influence. Of course, in reality, I think most parties have already collected the SDs from their MPs. But I also think there may be another reason, and I think it's a political reason, and it is this. By not only circumventing the party leadership to speak to the MPs, but also moving at such speed, the Agong is actually forcing parties, the political leadership of different parties, to wrap up their bargaining quickly. And I think more importantly, given what I said earlier, to also come to an agreement to nominate only one name per coalition or per party. We know, of course, at least one party, UMNO, has indicated that they may suggest more than one candidate to the Agong. So we must see how this proceeds, given now that the Agong has asked for MPs to submit the SDs directly.
So how open is this process, right? I mean, and I think the central question many people have is, will it be made known whom each MP selected?
Yeah, so I think it's clear from the letter, at least I think it was in the final paragraph, that MPs will not be able to publicly disclose who they supported in their SDs, at least for now. There are, of course, very good reasons for confidentiality. It allows MPs to vote based on their conscience and also to be protected from party repercussions for doing so. But I do hope that for the sake of transparency and also good precedents, that the Agong will at least eventually reveal what the majority is for the selected candidate. I think one of the biggest controversies from Lanka Sheraton, and part of the reason that we're here today, is that it was actually never revealed what Tan Sri Muhyiddin's majority was that led to the Agong appointing him. In fact, the notification that came out of the palace immediately after, or rather to mark Tan Sri Muhyiddin's appointment, didn't clearly say he had received a majority. The suggestion seemed to be that he was the person whom, in the Agong's view, was likely to receive, to command a majority in the House. So this is in itself a problem, especially when, as we've seen, after that that winning PM and his administration takes all possible means in the intervening year to avoid a vote in the House to confirm his appointment.
Maha, can an MP abstain from submitting a name?
I think so. There is nothing that requires an MP to vote on this issue. And certainly, I think nothing in the letter seems to suggest that it's obligatory to comply. Of course, there may be political ramifications for not doing so.
We do have this question here from Amar, who wants to know, why not call Parliament voting or simply revert to GE14's results?
Reverting to GE14's results is difficult because the Prime Minister constitutionally needs to have the confidence from a majority of MPs. And that may no longer be the case with the first PM who was appointed post GE14. Yeah, so that requires restating, and we need to go through that process again. In terms of convening Parliament, so there are practicalities at play. We have a new session fixed that is supposed to start on the 6th of September. Yeah, and this gets a little bit technical. But really, the only time in which we can hold a parliamentary sitting to determine this issue is really over the next few days. And it would be a sitting that is being held under the previous session, the third session of the 14th Parliament. And that session has to be wrapped up. As a matter of formalities, there has to be an end date for that session, a proroguing of that session, before the next session can actually formally be summoned. Yeah. So as far as I can tell, no proclamation has been issued by the Agong to formally summon the fourth session or to prorogue the third session. So I think practically there are issues there. But as I've said earlier, I think if what we hit is a deadlock with the SDs that are being submitted to the Agong, then it may be necessary to speedily convene Parliament so that the issue can be determined before the House.
So getting back to the question of those SDs once they're collected, you alluded earlier to the fact that there's not enough transparency perhaps into the process. What should happen? What happens once these SDs are collected?
Once these SDs are collected, I would estimate that if there is a clear indication of at least 111 or 112 MPs supporting a single candidate, then the Agong will proceed to appoint him or her as Prime Minister. But I think with anything less than 111, then there will be several options. The Agong could speak to party leaders once again individually or collectively, or perhaps even run a second round with a more specific list of nominees. That to me would be an unwise course of action. The best option, in my view, as I've said, is really at that stage. If that is what happens, then the Agong should do everything that's necessary to allow the decision to be made on the house, on the floor of the House through motions of confidence or no confidence.
Is the Agong obliged to accept the candidate with the most support? Are there other factors that could, enter the picture?
The Agong is obliged to accept the candidate with the most support, with the support of the majority of all MPs, not the candidate with a plurality of support. And I think this is key. Yeah. So if what we see is a plurality between, let's say, three different candidates, then the Agong still plays a role and can still play a role. But if there is a clear majority, so 111 plus, then in my view, the Agong's hands are tied.
Maha, it's been a tumultuous few years when it comes to our government. Are there ways to ensure that the next government remains stable and functioning until GE?
Well, yes, there are. And I think if the ruling coalition that comes out of this has 120 or 125 seats or less, then that coalition is going to be governing really at the edge of defeat till the next election. So the safest course would be for the next PM to reach across the aisle on a confidence and supply agreement, perhaps. And again, depending on the priorities of parties on that side, this could put a number of necessary and essential political reforms on the table, which will return stability to the system as a whole. And, you know, in a time when what we're witnessing in Malaysia is the giving away of two-party competition to multi-party competition, this could benefit all sides. Yeah. So top of my list, I think we must speedily enact an anti-party hopping law, and also law to limit the term of the prime minister. Where parliamentary reform is concerned, of course, independence of parliament is priority. There should be a Parliamentary Services Act. I understand there's actually one in draft form already, so that parliament can control its own budget, its administration and its manpower. So there's no question about the independence of parliamentary staff. And then within the working of parliament itself, really the members of parliament, not the government and not the speaker, should have more control over their agenda and their time. And I think what this means in practical terms is that the opposition leader and other party leaders should be equally involved in determining the business and administration of the House. MPs should definitely have the right to move urgent motions without needing the permission of the minister. And time should, of course, be set aside for private members' business. There are a whole host of reforms that I can talk about, but it'll take us a day.
Maha, thanks for speaking with us today.
Thank you so much for having me.
That was parliamentary consultant and researcher Maha Balakrishnan. Keep it here on the Evening Edition, BFM 89.9.
Thank you for listening to this podcast. To find more great interviews, go to bfm.my or find us on iTunes. BFM 89.9, the business station.